At one of our first interviews that we had with a family commissioner, he said, Colombia will not have political peace until it has peace in the homes.
This is Civios, your source for public affairs research. A podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
In this episode, we are talking with Greta Friedemann Sanchez, an associate professor at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs in the Global Policy Area. Friedemann Sanchez is a Colombian and an applied anthropologist whose research focuses on gender equity and how it is generated in the household and via public service provisioning. Her current work is about intimate partner violence in Colombia. Welcome, Greta. Thank you for coming and talking to us here. You've been doing research in Colombia on intimate partner violence. Can you talk to us a little bit and give us some background on the context of this research?
In 1996, Colombia passed its first legislation addressing intimate partner violence. In that legislation back then, 1996, it criminalized intimate partner violence, and in the legislation provided orders of protection, a way for women to seek orders of protection to protect themselves from intimate partner violence. This legislation was expanded in 2008. And what it did in 2008 is that it established the right for women to live free of violence, but it established that as a human right. And it had other pieces attached to it. So it reinforced the orders of protection and the criminalization of intimate partner violence, but it also provided other measures that allow women to exit cycles of violence. So for instance, it allowed now in 2008, it forced the state to provide employment for women, to provide a place for them where to live, to provide therapeutic services, transportation. So all of the sociocultural elements that keep women in the cycles of violence, it addressed those. So it was, and it is, the 2008 legislation, a very comprehensive legislation. So given this legislation, one of the things that is interesting about Colombia, interesting and very sad, of course, is that intimate partner violence is a very prevalent. The prevalence is very high. And in fact, from 1995 to 2008 and to today, the prevalence of intimate partner violence has increased. And so one of the questions that is out there is, why has it increased if we have a very strong legislation that protects women from intimate partner violence? So that was the origin of the study. Of course, I've also conducted research in Colombia before. Part of my doctoral work had to do with the floriculture industry. And in the context of that work is when I encountered intimate partner violence. And women clearly in that context were using the stable income that they had in order to exit violent homes. So in 2008, in the context of another study, I was talking to one of the feminist NGOs, and they had just passed the legislation of 2008, and they were explaining to me how the legislation worked. And what was interesting is that Colombia has a very sui generis system. So in order to understand how sui generis it is, let's think about the Minnesota system first. So in Minnesota, for instance, we have civil court judges and they handle the civil orders of protection. And we also have criminal judges and they handle the criminal side. They try aggressors that are accused of crimes of intimate partner violence. Both of those judges in the Minnesota system fall under the judicial branch. In Colombia, the civil orders of protection are issued by comisarios de familia, or family commissioners in English. But the difference is that comisarios de familia, family commissioners, are under the executive branch of government, under the local mayor's office. So it is a very different setup. So when I had met with this person working in the NGO, she had explained to me the two systems, where they are. And one of the things that I wanted to understand was, how is it that they're working? So I had that in my mind for a while. A couple of years ago, I had the luck of having a student who is a lawyer trained here in the United States, an American student, but who had also trained as a lawyer in Spain, fluent in Spanish. Her name is Margaret Grieve, and she calls herself by the name Peggy. So we started thinking about taking the project forward and understanding how is the law implemented. And so what is it that we have been doing for the past 2 years? We have been trying to understand and exploring what are the institutional structures and the processes that Colombia has in place to respond to intimate partner violence. And the entry point of this is, of course, orders of protection through the Family Commissioner's Office, because that's the entry point for women. That's the majority of the women enter that way. We also wanted to explore what are the practical, the legal, the institutional, and the contextual and cultural barriers that all of the service providers that come in contact with victims have in order to be able to exercise their duties, but also what makes their job easy? What are the facilitators? And of course, service providers in any profession, they develop innovations. And so we also wanted to understand, so what are the innovations that they have developed in order to do their job even better? So that's the story of how it all started.
Outside of Colombia, and especially in the United States, we're aware of the violence in the context of the ongoing Colombian conflict. How has this conflict actually affected violence against women? Can you talk about that?
It's a great question. The conflict affects every area of life for everybody. But of course, cycles of violence runs in cycles. So you cannot separate political conflict from family conflict. So what is it that we know that is happening in Colombia? So Colombia, 80% of all of the cases of violence that receive attention through Colombia's universal healthcare system are against women. Let's just pause and think about that from the statistics that we have. 80% of all the cases of violence receiving medical attention are against women. Of that 80%, almost 81% take place within the home. Only 19% of violence against women takes place outside of the family, outside of the home, including in the conflict. So for cases of sexual violence, 56% take place in the home. And one of the things that is, to me, really amazing is that when we talk about violence against women in the context of Colombia and in the context of Colombia's conflict, we usually think about that. We think about sexual violence. But we don't think about the types of violence that are occurring inside of the home. So how does it touch it? Well, a person, a combatant, and it doesn't matter in what side of the armed conflict, a combatant that is either in the military, the paramilitary, the drug dealers, or the guerrillas, they carry the violence that they're exercising outside inside of the home to the home. We have data from parts of the world that also have conflict, and even from the U.S. with police officers, that any individual that is armed, that they will exercise violence against their family members. So that's a way that it touches women. So what is it that we're seeing in Colombia, and how does this show up in terms of the prevalence? So intimate partner violence in Colombia is very high. 39% of women have been physically abused at some point in their lives. And for the past 12 months, it's 22%. So that's very high. And if one considers emotional violence, the prevalence is even higher. So for emotional violence, 66% of women have been abused in their lifetime and 52% in the past 12 months. So the prevalence is very high and the conflict clearly is seeping into people's homes.
Let's take this apart a little bit and go back and talk about how you even began to evaluate the implementation of this new law. I mean, it's such a huge undertaking. Can you talk a little bit about how you went through that process doing the evaluation?
The Center for Human Rights here at the University of Minnesota, Barb Fry directs the center. She had a project where she was training Colombian lawyers in human rights. And we had Colombian lawyers in Colombian academic institutions travel to Minnesota. And in one of those meetings, I met a Colombian lawyer who had worked both as an advocate and as an academic on intimate partner violence. And that was the initial entry point to begin to explore whether the evaluation was possible. So pre-fieldwork in academia, we call it pre-fieldwork trips. I took one of those in March of 2015 and spoke with her about the legislation. She was very kind and generous. She introduced me to several people who would guide me. And she was very key in saying, okay, which is the entry point? Is this work that will be valuable for Colombia? And the question is very important because Colombian NGOs, feminist NGOs, have done incredible and impressive and very good work on intimate partner violence. They have drafted the legislation, they have lobbied for their passing, and they have evaluated the legislation, the implementation of the legislation, in legal terms. So this was the complement to that work of actually talking to service providers, everyone who intersects on the ground, as a complement to that type of research. So after that field work, we were able to design a study. So how does the design take place? So in qualitative research, we want to see where is it that the legislation, the implementation works at its best. And that's going to be in cities that have the highest institutional development, and that would be Bogotá and Medellín. And then we could look at the places where implementation has more challenges, and that would be probably provincial towns and cities that don't have as much institutional development. So we had those in research, we call it sampling criteria. We started with Medellín, and there we had contacts with the city. So the mayor's office coordinates the family commissioners. The mayor's office, both in Bogotá and in Medellín, are doing an amazing job of really trying to organize the city's institutional structure to address intimate partner violence and to facilitate orders of protection. So we told them the aims of the study in both cities. And with these types of studies, you have to have the collaboration of the government. You cannot have access if you don't have the collaboration of the government. Medellín was very happy to have an inside view from the provider's perspective. And so we've conducted about 4 months of fieldwork total with 130 interviews. So we've interviewed family commissioners, prosecutors, police, criminal judges, family judges, and victims. And also in the midst of that, of course, we have to understand what are the views of local academics on the system and on partner violence, of course. So we talk to academics also. We talk to feminist NGOs that are involved. And feminist NGOs are involved because the legislation calls for civil society to have an oversight of what's happening with the law. So civil society are those. They're a group of feminist NGOs, and they rotate the leadership. So we talked to a few of those, also to get their perspectives and to also tell them what we're doing and to say, what else should we be asking, right, so that the work is helpful in Colombia. Research like this, also what is amazing is that serendipity plays a role, of course. So we met with the Vice Minister of Justice, and the Vice Minister of Justice was very interested in going to the Departamento de Boyacá, the Boyacá province. And we did a sampling in Boyacá. And one of the family commissioners there shared with us that there was going to be a congress with family commissioners in Bogotá, precisely the days that we were going to be there in October, this past October of 2016. So we went to the congress, and it was a training congress for family commissioners. And we presented preliminary results, and we asked them, we said, is this right? Are we getting it right? This is what we're hearing you say. And there were many hands coming up and saying, you're missing this, you're missing this. Can we interview with you? So that serendipity was very helpful. We interviewed maybe 15 more family commissioners from the province there. And then this past February, USAID had another training workshop with family commissioners, and we were able to talk with family commissioners from small towns that are in areas of conflict. So in general, to summarize it, the methodology that we have followed is what it's called an assessment process. in qualitative research. So you make a sweep with interviewing everybody in the system that plays a role in addressing intimate partner violence.
And you said just a little bit ago that at its heart, collaboration is the key. You have to have good collaboration with the officials. They have to trust you, and that unfolds slowly. What I'm curious about, now that you've started to build on that collaboration, how is this project being sustained? Can you talk a little bit about the funding?
Violence against women is not something that is easily fundable. So we submitted proposals to several international non-governmental organizations. We submitted inquiry letters to many foundations here in the United States that address gender equity issues. And at the end, Peggy Grieve and I basically funded the study on our own. Of course, I also have the support of the Humphrey School and the University of Minnesota, so I had a teaching leave to be able to go and do fieldwork, because it's the immersion of fieldwork is intense. And we have a small research budget, so some of my airplane tickets were covered with that. But the great majority and all of Peggy's costs, she covered them herself, and the majority of my hotel expenses and, you know, all of that, I also covered on my own. So I'm very passionate about it, and I think it should be done. We are going to issue a report, the policy report, that we hope will be helpful for Colombia, for non-governmental organizations in Colombia, for the government, for academics, for the family commissioners themselves. And that report has been funded by the Human Rights Initiative here at the University of Minnesota.
It's early in the process, but I'm wondering if you would be willing to share some of the results.
I mentioned in the beginning that Colombia has a very sui generis system because the family commissioners are under the executive, local executive, and the prosecutor and police, the prosecutor's office, the police, the family judges, criminal judges, they're all under the national branch. Of course, prosecutors and judges are under the judicial branch. So there is a level of disarticulation, and that disarticulation has negative consequences that stream down the line. So, for instance, one of those big effects is that because the family commissioner's office is at the municipal level and there are municipal elections for mayors every 4 years, the budget allocations for the office change according to those elections and to the priorities of the new mayors. So that's very big. Because the responsibilities that the family commissioners have are not known in general in any part of the system, whether it's national or local, one of the consequences of that is that the mayors assign non-judicial responsibilities to family commissioners, many, many administrative responsibilities. So, for instance, they have to, in small towns, issue and supervise contracts, for instance, for school lunches for 20 schools a municipality. So imagine the amount of time that this takes. They also have to issue and deploy and implement public policy on what type of issues, on child labor, substance abuse, on gender equity. So this is taking time away from the core responsibilities that the family commissioners have. And so what are some of those core responsibilities that family commissioners have? So I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation that they issue orders of protection. They issue temporary and permanent orders of protection. Within that responsibility, they have to have hearings, of course, and all of the legal proceedings that have to do with hearings, just like any judge would do here in the United States. They also have to deal with child maltreatment and protect and reestablish the rights of children who have been maltreated, either sexually or otherwise, within their homes. So that's a huge amount of work, just those two pieces. Why is it such a big amount of work? We know from research that homes that have intimate partner violence are very likely to have also child maltreatment. So if the prevalence of intimate partner violence is what I stated it was earlier in our conversation, imagine what child maltreatment is. So the volume of work that family commissioners have is very, very high. In addition, they have other responsibilities. They have, in small municipalities, they are in charge of something that it's called la ley del deporte, the sports law, where they have to make sure that adolescents and children are not using substances. And if they do, they have to call the parents, and the parents are responsible for their children. So that's just the scope of responsibilities that the family commissioners have is very large. And in small municipalities, they have even more. And because the mayors are the ones that assign those other responsibilities, and sometimes the city councils, the family commissioners in small municipalities are obligated to attend to that before attending to the judicial responsibilities. So that's one of the findings, because that has ramifications for issuing orders of protection. You asked me earlier how the conflict affects violence against women. I stated that the conflict affects everything. So one of the very moving results that we have had in talking to family commissioners is to really understand that any social problem, every social problem that Colombia has, gets evidenced. It shows up at the family commissioner's door. And every problem that Colombia has in terms of the conflict also shows up at the family commissioner's door. So let's take some examples, because this is intricate. So there is poverty in Colombia. There are income poverty, poverty of education. People usually resolve their issues, their problems, either in a neighborhood or in the family with violence, because it's just so prevalent in Colombia. So family commissioners always often say, when we were doing interviews, that they are the family emergency room. Anything that is happening, any conflict that shows up in the family, they end up at the family commissioner's door. Also because family commissioners are in charge of resolving conflicts that have to do, for instance, with child support and visitation or with disagreements with parenting. So how does it intersect with intimate partner violence? So you have cases of intimate partner violence that are within sectors of the population that are ex-combatants that are reinserted in neighborhoods, right, through the legal reinsertion process. So the paramilitaries, for instance. And the types of violence that you might have with those types of aggressors are very different than the types of violence that you might have in neighborhoods that are of high socioeconomic strata. So the types of orders of protection are different, right? If you have an ex-combatant that is locking a woman for 2 years or putting a child at gunpoint in order to exercise force and force the woman to do something, that's a very different context than the context of somebody who's very wealthy and is doing patrimonial violence, exercising patrimonial violence against his partner and not allowing her to work and so on. So that's in terms of the conflict. They have people who have been displaced, who live in very poor conditions. Oh, I'm missing the word hacinamiento in Spanish, that are in tenement, that are highly densely populated. So how does that reflect? So Colombia has a large displaced population. How does that reflect in intimate partner violence and in child abuse? Well, you can have a family who are 8 people living in one room, and the 14-year-old is living with the 8-year-old cousin, and he has been seeing his parents have intimate relations for 4 years because they've been living in close quarters for 4 years. That child begins to exercise violence against the 8-year-old cousin because he's just replicating the behavior that he's seeing. And so in that case, we have a child, a 14-year-old, that is both a victim and an aggressor. And family commissioners have to disentangle this. Those are some of the results that we are seeing is that the conflict seeps into the family and family commissioners have to disentangle that. Also, a lot of the needs that Colombia has in general and that aren't solved land at the family commissioners. For instance, lots of mental health issues, populations with schizophrenia, populations with mood disorders that are not treated, and families that come and say, I need help. my son or my daughter who has a mental disorder is hitting me. So what do you do? Because that son or that daughter is both, well, has needs for health services and yet is also being an aggressor. So the picture is a very complex picture. And the complexity of that picture isn't known outside of the family commissioner's offices. The complexity of the picture means that they not only have a big volume of work, but they have very complex cases that they have to follow. And those two pieces combined, it means that family commissioners are working very hard, very long hours, with very intense cases that are very violent. One of the things that we found is that, of course, they're depressed, they're stressed, and both Bogota and Medellin are very aware of the issues. And they're developing strategies to provide help to the helper. It's called apoyo al apoyo, help to the helper. So this is all, you know, in the making and in being deployed. One of the interesting things also, and this is something that has to do, it's a legal tweak, but it's important because it just shows the context of how the family commissioners work. So there's something called el derecho de petición. And the derecho de petición is a legal right that anybody who comes to the family commissioner's office has of finding out more about why a decision was made one way or another. And because it is a legal right that is a constitutional right, the family commissioners have to answer derecho de peticiones within a certain amount of time. And it's very limited. It's like 48 hours. For aggressors, and this is, I'm referring to this with regards to intimate partner violence, with aggressors that know about the right to derecho de petición, some of those individuals sometimes flood a family commissioner with derechos de petición, knowing that they're adding to the workload and that they are putting a shoe in the system and making the job of the family commissioner harder. And there is no, the family commissioner has no recourse, that legally there is no recourse for them. And when I was having an interview, this was one of the last interviews that we had in Bogota last November in a family commissioner's office, when we asked about the petition right, the family commissioner asked the social worker, she said, can you please bring me the box of such and such family? And it was a box, a huge box, two stacks actually, two boxes with petitions, one after another. And I just realized at that point, wow, this is violence, right? It's the exercise of another type of violence. One more point that we have found and that it's really important is that the law provides for the family commissioner's office to have an interdisciplinary team because, of course, you have to address family issues with an interdisciplinary team. So there is a psychologist and a social worker. So the responsibilities of the family commissioners aren't only legal, but they're psychosocial. And that's another piece that is not clearly understood in Colombia, is the role that all of the office plays in terms, not only legally, but of providing other types of services to families. And that has been quite surprising.
So Greta, when you pull back from the details that you just shared of how this conflict has just spilled over and created this web of violence, and the web of violence is perpetuated in the homes, can you talk a little bit about the big picture lessons learned and what some of the implications are on the ground with intimate partner violence? What's the big picture lessons learned that you've had?
So I think the biggest picture lesson is that Colombia needs to articulate all of its security policies. So Colombia right now has a lot of emphasis, of course. Colombia signed a peace agreement last year with the FARC, and it's in the process of negotiating a peace agreement with ELN, with the other guerrilla group. And a lot of its policies and a lot of the budget is going for post-conflict resolution. And it's also going for the drug component. One of the problems that Colombia had when the paramilitary reintegrated into society is that in that process, the BACRIM emerged, the bandas criminales, and it's basically micro-trafficking, which, by the way, also shows up in certain ways in the family commissioner's offices. What I mean by articulating all of its security policies is that Colombia cannot ignore the family and the role that family commissioners and prosecutors and family judges, the entire system, forensic medicine, the police play in also making home secure. In one of our first interviews that we had with a family commissioner, he said, Colombia will not have political peace until it has peace in the homes. And it really is so true. So that's the biggest flying very high lesson. While we do that, one of the things that is very important is to make sure that Colombia can effectively implement the 2008 law and that it implemented not only in the big cities like Bogotá and Medellín, but in medium-sized cities and in small cities and municipalities. The other big picture is that service providers in every branch have misconceptions about the other areas. The volume of work that prosecutors has is also enormous, and it is enormous because every order of protection that arrives that a family commissioner issues has to be sent to the prosecutor's office and followed up with. So not only are family commissioners overworked, prosecutors are also overworked. So what we hope that our study will illuminate is providing a very in-depth and detailed description of the responsibilities that each office has, the barriers that the offices have, the facilitators that they have, and the ways that they have innovated to have the system work better. The other big picture lesson that we have seen, that we've learned, is that Colombia doesn't have central record keeping. So Colombia really needs to develop an innovative way to collect information in the different offices. So for instance, right now, Bogotá has a very good system. Medellín also has a system. But the smaller cities and towns do not have a system to be able to keep track how many temporary orders of protection have been issued, how many permanent ones, how many of those ended up. So this is the coordination of the information. How many of those ended up being dismissed in the criminal side of the system? How many ended up being convicted in the criminal side of the system? We don't have that information. And this lack of record keeping and not being able to coordinate that information in terms of the numbers, we see it all over. So there is lack of interinstitutional coordination. Everybody is working so hard. It was just amazing. That's another one of the lessons that we learned is everybody wants to help. Everybody really understands the importance of intimate partner violence. Most family commissioners do. Some of them, yes, they need some training on gender dynamics and cycles of violence. Mayors of big cities, they really want to work hard, but the coordinating the system is very difficult. So we hope that with our report, we'll be able to provide some of the guidelines. And what we do in anthropology is to be able to describe in order to provide a map of what is happening on the ground.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Civios, an initiative of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. To learn more about this segment, please visit civios.umn.edu.